up to you as we record another show. Soon it'll be Phil time. Phil, while I'm getting the Facebook thing streaming, why don't you tell people in the pre-show that you're now a vaccinated individual?
Well, that's right. I went to Brampton. I went to Brampton on Saturday with Mummy, and she got her second shot. I got her my first shot, and about time, and people suck sometimes when they talk about choosing vaccines over one another.
Yes.
I mean, you go to a supermarket, you're going to buy any type of chocolate cookie, no matter what brand.
Yes.
And it's still
chocolate. Not really. No, I disagree with that analogy.
Well, statistics say otherwise. 72% of shoppers now prefer grocery brands over the regular standard brands.
No, Phil's point is if you're in the mood for a chocolate cookie and, you know, let's say your preferred brand isn't there, you wouldn't get a chocolate cookie? Come on.
Maybe not.
No, right. All right. Okay.
What?
All right.
You don't compromise with your chocolate cookie.
I could have preferred my dead virus over my mRNA.
I think that's a terrible analogy.
Well, I don't. I would eat it. Listen, there. Hey, if you give me some of my magic medicine and then just put a chocolate cookie in front of me, I don't care where it was made. I don't care who made it.
Came from the same exploited Brazilian rainforest anyways.
Yeah, but then...
Yeah, what he said.
That really doesn't apply either because now you're not of sound mind.
Okay, well, when am I ever of sound mind?
Never.
Please, exactly. All right, here we go. Here we go. There we go.
The following episode of Humble and Fred is brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, the Chambers Plan, Clear Air Solutions, Palma Pasta, SafeTech Security, NextHome.ca, DraftKings, Red Light Holland, City Parent, and our new sponsor, HealthGate, providing digital solutions to improve health outcomes. If you'd like to talk to Humble and Fred, our Twitter handle is HumbleFredRadio. And now from the remote headquarters of the Humble and Fred Show, here are Humble and Fred.
Gig Sky guest of the day, Murray McLaughlin today, Straw Hats and Old Dirty Hankies. We have him on. We had him on quite recently, didn't we? And by recently, I mean in the last couple of years.
I think so. Yes.
Yeah. All right.
He came right into the studio, did he not?
And we had his Mrs. McLaughlin, Denise Donlan, had her on promoting her book, and that was also within the last couple of years.
Yes, power couple.
Oh, yeah.
That's a power couple.
Yeah, a lot of people think we're a power couple.
You know what that is? When it comes to couple, that is.
Yeah.
Double shot power.
Do you know that? That some people think we're a power couple?
No, do they?
Hey, well, we're, you know, and it's just coincidence that we've started the show or the pre-show, which is that little part you just heard. Sometimes we just start talking about vaccines and such. And I think maybe people think, oh, those guys just do that so they can talk about the government. And every day, how more and more people across Ontario are receiving their COVID-19 vaccines. Health Canada-approved vaccines are conveniently available in hospitals, doctors' offices, pharmacies, and mass vaccination sites. Was you at a pharmacy, Phil?
Mass vaccination site.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Well organized? Everything was put together?
Very efficient. 15 minutes early.
Every dose brings us closer to what we've missed on the show today. We'll discuss moving to phase two here in Toronto and what that means. So join millions of Ontarians, do your part and get your shot. Visit Ontario.ca/bookvaccine paid for by this government of Ontario.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. On that point, you know, second phase reopening, something that took place in Britain this weekend, which I would like to see adopted here, if we could. It was an outdoor concert called Download Fest. 10,000 people were invited. No social distancing, no masks, fully vaccinated. No social distancing. They were allowed to mosh. Is that the way?
Yeah.
Do I sound old when I say you're allowed to mosh? Or
I don't know.
There was moshing.
Believe me, that's not the only thing that makes us sound old.
But the whole idea of this thing was to track everyone there.
Oh, okay.
and see if it becomes a spreader event. So actually, it's like a COVID test event, which is pretty cool, because in Britain, you know, this Delta variant has become a bigger problem than it is here, if in fact it's even a problem per se here. But I think that's pretty cool. I mean, you know, you put it to the test like that, and you know, if it passes the test, then you can move forward even faster.
Well, it will be with the results of that, and I think it's cool. Mm-hmm. They'll be able to see, well, if we put 10,000 people that are vaccinated in space and it has zero transmission, then they'll take those numbers and go, okay, so if we have this many people, this is the kind of space we'll need, etc.
Is this what they'll do? This is what they'll do.
In Saskatchewan, my home province, the government announced Sunday that all public health restrictions. I feel like I'm getting a little bit of some audio coming back through you, Frederick. Is that just my imagination? I mean, is there a speaker that you've got up?
No.
Okay. So the government announced, this is Saskatchewan, that Sunday, announced Sunday that all public health restrictions, and this includes mask mandates and gathering limits, will be lifted in that province on July 11th. So, is that for people just inside the walls of Saskatchewan? And so they've got, I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you got people coming in and out of the provinces all the time, do we not, Phil? Are we not allowed to travel unrestricted now in Canada, or no?
Well, it's based on provincial government guidelines. So if you remember, we had a ban from leaving Ontario for Manitoba or Quebec, but that was rescinded. So the provinces are allowed to provide these sorts of restrictions as long as it's a health crisis.
Plus, Saskatchewan, you know, one person, the density is what, one person per 200,000 miles or something?
Yeah, that's what
it is. So it's a little
that's
easier.
That's what it is.
You're literally the last person on Earth.
I know you're not a scientist, but that's even you.
I mean, when you're dealing with that kind of density.
No, I understand it. And that's what I guess I'm asking it in a ham-fisted or whatever awkward way. Mm-hmm. That's fine if you live there. But if you and I travel to Saskatchewan, we don't have to wear masks indoors, or we can gather in mass?
I don't know. Maybe we should get one of your Saskatchewan buddies on the blower and ask them what the rules are.
As long as they let you in.
Well, I know my buddy Clark Gordon still lives. He's a huge Rough Rider fan. He's a guy who lives in Weyburn, Saskatchewan. I literally went from kindergarten to grade 12 with Clark, so he might know. We don't look at Facebook, Phil, so maybe Clark's on Facebook and he'll be able to tell us. But anyway, that province is just, it's open. July 11th, if you live in Saskatchewan, the pandemic is over. I'm not ready, by the way. Oh, Murray McLaughlin's here. All right, well, okay. I wasn't ready for Murray McLaughlin, but he's here.
Well, maybe he's checking.
Well, let's see. We'll ask him, are you just checking, or you want to wait till 8 o'clock? Murray? Hi, Murray.
Good morning. How are you?
We're good, brother. We're always, you know, happy to have you on our show. We just didn't think you were coming on until 25 minutes from now.
No, I'm just testing my Zoom connection. That's all.
That's cool.
That's cool.
Basically.
Yeah. All right.
So if you want to wait, that's cool. Checking it out.
Well, here's the thing. We can either do this epic interview now, or you can go have a coffee, say hi to Denise, and then come back at 8 o'clock. It's up to you.
Well, we could do it now. That's fine. I'm all ready to rock.
Yeah, all right. There you are.
There I am.
Oh, there he is. Look at
my fish and everything.
Yeah. Where do we find you this morning?
I'm at Stony Lake.
Get out.
I'm out in the porch, kind of hiding from the rain, and everybody else is sleeping. Last night, my son and I celebrated Father's Day with the better part of a jug of scotch.
Nice.
What kind?
Cardew.
Oh, you know what? I like Bell. You know, I like cheap scotch. Yeah. I like Bell's.
Well, you know, that's your right.
Yeah,
it is your right.
Right to drink Aqua Velva if that's your choice.
No, exactly. Yeah. Hey, you know, Murray, you're on Stony Lake. You know where I am right now?
Nope.
I'm on Lovesick Lake, just one up from you.
Oh, one lock away.
That's right.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Hey, Freddie, why don't you bring some of your cheap scotch over there later?
Yeah, you should.
That's Donnie Walsh country up where you are.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Donnie used to... Well, he may not be up there anymore, but he used to be.
Oh, okay. Do you ever come through the locks, like through Lovesick and stuff like that, Buckhorn? And
I have, but usually going the other way, down towards Catchwanooka and Lakefield and such.
You know, I'm not much of a lake guy, Murray, but I've been at Fred's place, and it was the first time I'd ever seen the locks, and Fred kind of explained the system to me. But here's a dumb question. When you're going navigating from lake to lake, is there a set time that you need to be at the locks for them to allow you to pass, or is it just as a per boat basis? I know it's stupid, but...
It's not a stupid question. It's a very good question, actually. In my humble experience, all you need is you have to buy a pass.
Okay.
For your vessel, of course.
Although they don't always check, you know, Murray. It's weird.
Well.
The last three or four times I've gone through, they haven't even checked.
Well, explain that to me then. You just show up with a boat or a pass, and when you show up, then they put you through?
If they have enough boats in the lock, then they'll lock them all through, yeah. But sorry, go ahead.
No, I was saying, Howard, I've never taken you through the locks.
No.
I thought I had.
No, I've never been through it. I mean, I've been to them. I've seen them.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
You know, the best way to go through the locks is riding on a bagel. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't know what you mean.
A tube.
Oh,
anyway,
I see.
Anyway, when it's full, yeah, they let the boat through. But one of the best sports on the Trent Severn Waterway is watching the rented houseboats go through the locks.
Yeah, I bet.
The best example I can think of was there was a large rented houseboat one day. I was actually down at Young's Point, and they secured the boat very tightly to the big cable that comes down the side of the lock. And, of course, as the lock began to fill up, the bow of the boat began to be pulled under as the water rose. And there was a lot of panicking and not actual sinking, but there was a lot of screaming and swearing and panicking. And that happens fairly often.
Isn't that interesting? That happens quite often with people that aren't familiar with the locks. They'll tie on secure. And then, again, the water starts to drop and the boat stays at that level.
Exactly.
Here at Burley, the Burley Falls Lock, a few years ago, one of those houseboats, you know, people rent houseboats and they're given like a half hour lesson and then they're out on the water. It went right sideways in the lock, and then it becomes a huge challenge to, you know, free it. There's a lot of those situations. Are you down, what part of Stoney? Are you down around McCracken's Landing?
My family cottage used to be down that way, yeah.
Yeah.
Denise and I got married on at St. Peter's on the Rock Church. Oh,
did you really? Way.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
How far is that from you, Freddie?
But like through the locks, it's 5 minutes when you turn down towards Clear Lake. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Okay, one more lock question. And again, I apologize. Is it a do-it-yourself thing or is there somebody there that is operating it? I know that seems ridiculous.
Yeah, there's a lock.
A locksmith? A lock person?
Yeah, a locksmith.
And it's all electricity now. Do you remember, Murray? I don't know how long you've been there, when the lock masters used to have to do it manually, like twist the things. And I mean, you had to be in good shape. You literally had to crank.
So what are they doing? They're cranking the valve open and shut?
Right. And they used to have to crank the doors open as well.
Really?
Before it all went power. Yeah.
Hi, welcome to the Humble and Fred Show. Our guest is locks lock expert Murray McLaughlin. Lockmaster.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Lockmaster. Well, we're here talking. I don't know if anyone. I was going to do this big introduction, but it's useless now. Murray McLaughlin's with us again. Murray, you're doing some press for a new release. It's called Hourglass, and we're going to sample some of that. And but do you have any concept, or do you even know numerically what number this is? Like, if someone said, "Hey, what album is this, Murray?" Say a guy like me.
I've made a lot of records, and some of them get counted and some of them don't. Some people count live albums, some people don't. So
right.
I'm told it's the 20th studio album that I've made at this point, which is not, I don't think it's a world record or anything like that, but there's been a few of them, sure.
Do you remember what was the year of the very first one? 1970?
I started working on Song from the Street in 1970 when I came back from New York.
And when I guess I wanted to go back because I was thinking about you being on the show And I was thinking about, you know, Fred and I, maybe, you know, in our teen years, were inspired by some people in radio and then wanted to become, you know, radio guys. I remember the first disc jockey I heard that kind of made me realize you could be irreverent and have a sense of humor. And I was like, oh, I could maybe do that. Do you remember what it was in your sort of formative years? What was the first thing that you sort of were inspired by and went, oh, I think I'd like to do that? Was it the Beatles? Was it some other songwriter? Was it Valdi? Could it have been Valdi? I don't know why I chose Valdi. But do you know what I mean? Like, do you remember being inspired and thinking, okay, now I know what I want to do?
Well, when I was a kid, my burning ambition was to be an illustrator. I wanted to be a wildlife illustrator, and I went to art school with that in mind. You know, I didn't know what their names were, but I loved the pictures of heroic deer and leaping fish on the cover of Sports Afield magazine and Field and Stream. But something happened while I was in art school, and that was that I got exposed to the work. There was a group of writers coming out of New York that were putting contemporary lyrics to, you know, more or less traditional folk forms. It was like, I guess, what they'd call a mashup in the more recent past. But it had an energy to it because it was, a lot of it was about civil rights and human rights, and being a fairly impressionable 15-year-old guy, I bit that pretty hard. And so I got really diverted from visual arts into music at that point. It happens to a lot of people. I mean, it seems that people in music either were in visual arts or they were in economics. Mick Jagger was in economics. I guess that figures.
That was a pretty wild era, too. Early 70s, like, you know, especially in Toronto, like Neil Young, Joni Mitchell, Murray McLaughlin, a lot of influence there, regardless of the genre.
It was the beginning of, I guess, what you'd, you know, for want of a better word, the era of the singer-songwriter. My contemporaries, people I met, people I hung out with and knew very well, my friends, if you want, were, you know, John Prine and Steve Goodman, who wrote City of New Orleans. There was a hit for Oliver Guthrie. Mm-hmm. You know, I met Loudon Wainwright III was a good hangout person. Jim Croce I met down in Philadelphia. You know, quite a number of people were my contemporaries. And yeah, of course, I met Joni actually first at she was on my first airplane ride. We all trucked up to Sudbury to Laurentian University to do a television show called Let's Sing Out. And she wasn't famous. She hadn't put out an album yet, but she certainly got your eye.
Yeah.
She was quite, quite beautiful. And I mean, just to put an idea of what the era of that show was, it was hosted by a folk singer named Oscar Brand, who was really renowned for doing filthy songs for university students on records. But one of the principal guests on the show was a guy named Jimmy Driftwood. You ever heard of him?
No.
He played an old guitar that was made out of barrel staves that his great-grandfather built in West Virginia somewhere in the mountains. And he's the guy that wrote The Battle of New Orleans, which was a big hit for Johnny Horton.
Oh, right.
He also wrote Sink the Bismarck. So he was, and he sounded like Grandpa Jones. He was just a bizarre guy, but really a lot of fun and really an interesting person to hear.
So was that when you kind of decided, like, hey, I'm not sure where this is going to go, but this is the direction I'm going to go in?
I've always kind of looked at the, like, a general picture that everything that you do creatively is just one facet of a whole thing. And my desire has always been to make art. It happens that, you know, principally I view myself as a writer. And because of my experience in visual arts, I write very visually. I try to create images and songs that bring people emotionally into the sphere. I've never really thought of it as a career. I think if you actually think of making music as a career, well, you probably should be doing something else. The fact is, I've always thought of it as an avocation. It's something that I do because, well, in the case of the record that we're talking about, the newest record, it's a way of trying to make sense of my world, understand my world, or comment on it in some way. I mean, I don't think I'm, you know, I'm not the president of the United States. I'm not going to make, you know, a huge difference walking around on the planet. But, you know, little stones make ripples that go everywhere, and you never know. Mm-hmm. I know that songs do influence people because they influenced me. So that's all I'm trying to do.
So I'm looking at the notes here, and the point is it's not necessarily a COVID album per se.
But, no, definitely not.
But did COVID put you in the mindset for this album? If you follow what I'm saying, like just everybody's just a little bummed, a little down, a little
confused. No, it had nothing to do with the mindset. I mean, the source of those songs, like the 1%, had nothing to do with COVID. I mean, 1% really started. The germ of it was really the Occupy Wall Street movement that happened years ago.
Mm.
I think I Live on a White Cloud is much more obviously related to the murder of George Floyd, which horrified everyone on the planet, and rightly so. But the germ of that is older for me. When I, you know, there was a person that I worked with some years ago. He was a quite well-to-do black man, well-dressed, drove a really nice car. He was late for something one day, just a little, and he apologized. He said, yeah, it was a DWB. And I went, you know, dumb me. I went, what's that? And he said, you're shitting me. Are you kidding? You don't know? And I said, no, what? And he said, driving while black.
All right.
What? And he went, yeah, like I'm a well-dressed black man driving a BMW. And, you know, every time a police cruiser sees me, they pull me over because they think I'm a drug dealer or that I'm, you know, doing something nefarious. Mm-hmm. And I found out that was pretty commonplace. So I think that started the ball rolling about thinking of like how my life is different because I'm a white man, and also how life is really different for people who are not just black, but racialized, Aboriginal, any person that, you know, finds himself on the butt end of the law, or held down by social constraints. You know, I wanted to look inside me and see if there was any of that stuff there. And, you know, yeah, there is. So I have to look at that, and then I have to cut it out.
So when you're thinking about these things, and as you say, you know, your life began in a visual way, and then and you think of yourself as a writer. So do you write the lyrics to something like that? Are there words that come out, or are you noodling around on a guitar and then you think, oh, this would be good for that song? Like, it's kind of
simple.
It starts with an idea, and then where does it go?
Well, the simple answer to that complex question is yes.
sorry.
It happens in every way. I mean, some projects, they develop spontaneously out of a musical idea. This particular one, all these songs actually began as poems. And they married themselves to little guitar pieces that I've been doing. You know, a good example is the 1%. I had that little kind of F sharp minor E lick sitting around, and I kept going, like, I got to do something with this. And when I first wrote that song, when I wrote the lyric, the poem, I mean, it was quite dark. And I put it to this kind of 4-beat rock thing. I thought, this will work. And it just sucked. Like, I hated it. And then, like, through some magic thing, that little lick married itself to that set of lyrics. And I went, oh, yeah, you know, that's what Denise once told me is true. You can catch more flies with honey.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can put a heavy lyric inside of a nice lilting musical framework. And, you know, some of the comments I got on YouTube on that song were like, wow, really great social commentary without the sledgehammer. So, you know, obviously that worked. So, yeah, they started it out on this record as poems. And every single song on it is actually interestingly structured. I had an idea that rather than try and write a chorus, you know, which is generic in songwriting, I would actually make the hook in the song musical. And so, like, every single song is like that. It has a little musical piece that it keeps referring back to all the time.
Well, I'm waving
my hands. No, like I get Bill Gates here.
I've only got access right now to a Thompson Day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to play some of that. Before I do, maybe you can describe what we're about to hear, and then we'll play a little bit of it.
The painting itself, The West Wind, it's iconic. You know, it's probably the best known work of art in Canada, to the point where Steve Martin loves it. Mm. Tom Thompson himself is an iconic figure and a legendary figure enshrouded in mystery. But I mean, every school kid, I think, that grew up in Canada, there's probably a picture of The West Wind on the wall somewhere near Queen Elizabeth II. Everybody knows that painting. So I'm very privileged because, you know, because I do live in Toronto, I can walk down the road, go to the Art Gallery of Ontario, and there's the painting on the wall. And it's really magnificent. It's big and it's energetic. And it is, there's no question in your mind about where it is. It ain't even Norway. It's Canada. And sometimes I feel, you know, like here at Stony Lake, for instance, I'm like, we're on a shoreline where the west wind comes blasting off the lake when the wind's high. You get like 3 foot rolling white caps and everything's moving and you go like, wow, I'm in the painting. Mm-hmm. So the song is, it's about kind of the painting falling into the painting and then realizing that for that one moment when you're looking at this sort of magic little thing in nature, that life is ephemeral. You know, it's sweet because it ain't forever. And everything that's living kind of reflects that reality in the most beautiful way. So the song is really, it's that moment.
Well, let's have a listen.
I write a line like, I may not be here forever, but I'm here today. That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm. Have a listen to yourself. This is you and a little bit of a Thompson Day. And this is from Hourglass. Murray McLaughlin, available July 9th. Have a listen.
Sometimes I forget the world, people and things, and get lost in a place where wildness is king. Let the waves roll, soothe my soul, while the west wind blows. Every fish that's in the water, every eel in the sky, flying high. Every tree and every dragonfly says, I'm alive.
It's a very interesting video. It's a lot of you canoeing. It's very
yeah,
nice.
I got my hands on something that I've longed and lusted after for years and years. I got my hands on an old Grumman canoe.
Oh, nice.
Those wonderful folks that brought you like Navy carrier fighters and delivery vans also make canoes. And it's like simply the best canoe in the planet. It's got a keel, so you don't get a lot of leeward drift when you're paddling and you can single-handed. And it's indestructible. You're an iconic canoe.
I have a point and a question. A few minutes ago, you made the point that when you were writing the songs and some of the issues George Floyd came up, that you realize there's some of that within you and you need to correct it. If basically what you said, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, sure.
No, that is so cool because, you know, when it comes obviously to racism and stuff, it's always somebody else. It's the other guy who's racist. It's not me. And I think that's really key because I think all of us have to sort of look within because we're all guilty of things we're not proud of. That's my point.
Yeah.
And the question was, when you write this stuff now, Howard and I have noticed over the years or made the point that artists like you, when you started in your early 20s, did writing come easier when you were young and your mind maybe not as cluttered as it is now?
Sorry, I just love that phrase. My mind wasn't as cluttered. Right, I was right. Holes in my head. It wasn't any easier then. In fact, I really tried hard to write, important songs. And when I really tried to write important songs when I was 18 years old, they were just dreck. Because you're 18 and you really have a very kind of narrow view of the world, and a lot of it is really centered around yourself. But I think the first time I realized that I had written something that was lasting and that was really true was when I wrote Child Song. I wrote that when I was 19 years old. Mm-hmm. And it was just a raw experience, just a narrative of a raw experience. And of course, that's the first song that Tom Rush recorded. And that's why I ended up going to New York to live for a while. Mm-hmm. So after that, I realized that, you know, if you're a writer, the most important thing that you can be doing is not trying to write like somebody else, mm-hmm. not trying to, you know, write somebody else's song in a different way. It has to be filtered through your own experience and your own eyes. Like, you know, when I was coming up, a lot of people wanted to be Bob Dylan. Everybody who picked up a guitar or played a harmonica was called the next Bob Dylan. And I realized pretty early on that there was Bob Dylan, and one of them was just fine. Thank you very much. You know, I'm not trying to write Blowing in the Wind. I don't think I could. Mm-hmm. So I write the things that I can write, and I write them filtered through my own lens.
Yeah, but you say that it's, you know, a lot of writers or artists early on sort of borrow from others, and you're influenced by people and things, and whether it's music or art. Have you had this experience? We've asked other musicians this, where you'll write something, or maybe it happened early on, where you come up with something, you think, oh, that's great, and then you sort of go, oh, wait a second, I've just written Blown in the Wind too. Do you know what I mean? Like, you just go, oh, that's a little bit too derivative of something else I've heard.
No, excuse me. Let me try that in a more masculine voice.
As soon as your voice changes, you let us know.
I know. It's like I just got out of the boys' choir.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not really a... I don't feel that... that's been a problem for me. Again, because I consciously gave up trying to write like somebody else very early on. And most of the people who were my contemporaries, I mean, you know, I mentioned John Prine or Steve Goodman, who are my friends. They said, you know, like you don't really sound like anybody else. I mean, as a singer, you sort of sound like Hank Snow, but. And I went, really? Okay, well, that's interesting. Probably the best take on, I mean, Canadian songwriting, which is very different. I mean, we've got a thing going here and have for a very long time. But the most interesting take I ever heard on Canadian songwriting was when I toured in Japan. And it was in Kyoto. And a university kid came up to me and he said, they know everything. About everything, like they're manic. They have clubs and stuff. And this kid came up and he said, "What's Bruce Murdoch doing now?" I said, "How in the hell do you know about Bruce Murdoch? He's like the most obscure Montreal songwriter on the planet. Oh, we know everybody. We know David Wiffen and Bruce Coburn, and we know everybody. And we love Canadian music. Very different from American music. Very different from British music." I said, "Why? What's different about it for you?" He said, this is exactly what he said. He said, "A wind blows through it."
Isn't that interesting?
Wow. And I went, holy. I don't know.
You can swear. It's a podcast now. You can say whatever the fuck you want, Murray. Seriously.
But I went, you know, that's an incredible observation. I mean, and it's poetic, too, the way he said it.
Let's talk about Hourglass, and if we can, because we're going to have to wrap up in a couple minutes. When you sat down to make this record, obviously some parts of it during the pandemic, you mentioned your 20th studio album. Is it as exciting when it's, two-part question, when you started, is it as exciting as it used to be for you, and is it also exciting when it's done? Like, are you happy to have it behind you?
First of all, my biggest excitement comes making the songs, creating the songs. Mm-hmm. And out of that flows the feeling of, like, I really want people to hear these. And out of that flows the desire to go. It really is. It's a tremendous amount of fun to get together with your musical friends. I mean, like, you know, the guys on this record, they're serious characters. I mean, Victor Bateman, the bass player, he like reads philosophy. And he understands it. He can debate philosophy. So the drummer, Al Cross, he's an amazing guy. He's like incredibly intuitive and responsive and comes up with like really unusual little grooves. You know, Burke Carroll is kind of the child of Ron Dann, who is, I don't mean literally, but in spirit, like he's a orchestral style steel player. And I have a concept when I record too. I want it to be live. So I sit in front of a big tube mic. There's the guitar and there's the voice, and it mixes itself.
Wow.
And if you screw up, well, you do it over again. You know, it's the McLaughlin theory of recording. You put people in a room that can play and you record it.
Wow.
You know, there's no soundscapes on this record.
Not a lot of overdubs in the McLaughlin method.
Zippo. Yeah, I mean, that used to be the case where, I mean, I've got records, and I hear records that were made in the 80s. I can't stand listening to them because everything in the frickin' rack is on the record, and they sound horrible. But I like a very natural sound. Yeah, I mean, this record was entirely recorded when there was no touring possibilities, obviously.
Yeah.
And there was a desire that I had to, you know, reunite with my musical buddies, get into the studio under safe circumstances, of course. We did all the right stuff. And, you know, the feeling of like putting them to work is the wrong way to put it. But getting everybody together and creating a project was really exciting for everybody. It was tremendously exciting for me. You know, and the letdown is when it's done. I mean, that's when it happens.
Right.
Because I build up a tremendous amount of energy and enthusiasm in the middle of all that. And as you're creating and as the tracks come together and you get excited about what you're hearing, you know, it builds. And then it's done. And you mix it and it's done. And you go, shit, what the hell do I do now?
Go well, canoeing.
You know, I guess you go tour it, you know.
Don't be sad it's over. Be glad it happened, as they say. Plus, you talk about your musical buddies. Now, he has since moved, I understand, but Ronnie Hawkins also was on Stony Lake. Did you guys ever get together? I mean, those must have been cool campfires, you know, sitting around with Ronnie. Did that happen?
I met Ronnie first years and years and years ago. And yeah, I used to see Ronnie and Richie York regularly at the Stony Lake Market. They'd show up looking for hangover cures or whatever. But, you know, I mean, I ran into Ronnie periodically and often over the years. I think I first met him at a party at Lightfoot's house when the Rolling Thunder Review was in town.
Right.
But I mean, I have my own Ronnie Hawkins quote.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people have that.
So what's that?
I'm very proud of the fact that my Ronnie Hawkins quote.
Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
Somebody asked him about me, and he said, "Murray McLaughlin, he could piss off Jesus."
You know, I was at Ronnie's a couple of times, and he told me that Gordon Lightfoot wrote Sundown on Stony Lake, one of those little cottages at the foot of his property. Pretty cool. Well,
that could be. I have no knowledge of that one. I know why he wrote it.
Murray McLaughlin. I'm just looking here. The album's all, you can pre-order it. All the places, Amazon, Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, something called Bandcamp. It's available July 9th. And I'm going to play us out with, I found the YouTube version of the 1% here. And, you know what, it's always great catching up with you. Thanks for, I'm glad you came in early. We got a little extra time. Give our best to Denise. Tell her we always have a place for her whenever she wants to come on, talk about things. And all the very best to you, sir. Always pleasure catching up with you.
Well, thank you guys very much for talking to me. I appreciate it very much. I had a nice morning, and you know, I think it's possible that I'm still under the effects of last night's scotch. Which is,
Well, I was going to say, you know what? With us, Murray, it always turns out that we actually end up being more pleasant than people think we're going to be. So look at us.
I have no experience whatsoever of you ever being unpleasant.
I know. Listen, man.
Did you kill the whole bottle of scotch?
No, just half.
All right.
By the way,
I realized that the morning was going to come eventually, and wisdom prevailed.
When Freddie mentioned Bell's Scotch, because I don't drink anymore, but because I drank everything I could, but I used to call Bell's Scotch 4 o'clock Scotch, because I'm like, all right, let's get started. Yeah. Give me some Bell's. All right, Murray, take care. All the best to you.
Well, just remember, there's nothing wrong with blended.
No, nothing. Not at all.
All right. My new motto is there's nothing wrong with weed. Take care. Murray McLaughlin, take care.
All righty, you bet.
All right, all the best. Here, it's Humble and Fred here. Just let yourself out of the meeting. Thank you, sir. Fredzy, I got not 100% sure my mic's working. I mean, it is working, but there's a noise on it. But while you're doing the chamber plan, You're shaking your head. You didn't hear anything?
I'm not hearing anything. No.
Okay. Well, I'm getting a little
line. Did you hear anything,
yeah.
Phil?
No. What you don't know is I potted myself down in between because there's some line noise coming through. Anyway, while we listen to a little Murray, we got to talk about our friends at the Chamber Plan, because as you've pointed out, I mentioned Murray was the Gigs Guy guest of the day. Do I do it?
Yes.
Beginning and the end? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, hang on. Before you do that, let me just say the guest of the day brought to you by Gigs Guy, the only worldwide mobile data provider with affordable rates in over 190 countries. Download the app today for Android or iOS, and we'll tell you more about Gigs Guy later. Thank you, Phil. Go Freddy.
Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. You can get a free quote today. Go to chamberplan.ca. It's all there. Just follow the instructions. And there's a plan for you. Different levels, different options, different products. It's all there. If you have a small business and it's something you've thought about, well, this is the answer. 30,000 Canadian businesses are part of this. They've been around for 40 years. This is dental insurance. This is prescriptions, all sorts of therapies, again, depending on the level that you buy into. All right. The Teladoc system is there for everyone. Best Doctors Program. It's really cool. Again, 30,000 Canadian businesses are part of this. So, you know, they can hold the line on premiums. It makes it a lot easier to hold them down because, well, it's so massive. It really is a brilliant idea. It's simple to sign up. Again, just go there. You can get a free quote right online. Take it from there. It's stable. Yeah, 40 years. And the smart thing to do for your employees. It's the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, chamberplan.ca.
Thank you, Fred. I'm just corresponding with Dan Drew. Anyways, Dan, I figured it out, or I think I figured it out. I think it was just like everything was fine. And then when Murray came on Zoom, my fader here was producing something. Anyway, are you? I couldn't see. Do you have your watch on?
Yes.
9.2. That's how many hours of sleep I had yesterday morning. It's weird. Nice. Because honestly, you know, I'm averaging between, you know, 6.5 to 7, whatever, you know, during the week, maybe not as much. But when I woke up yesterday morning, I was looking at my watch. I'm like, oh, good look at my heart rate was down, and I'd had this deep, deep sleep. You can gauge your health by using these watches that Freddie and I have from healthgauge.com. Great news. Stand by for a promo code that is in effect today. I know a bunch of you have been asking about the there's several people. I think Rod Fichette, I believe that's his name, Rod, had sent us a note asking about it. A few others have as well. I spoke with Tim in Florence from Health Gauge the other day, and he was telling me, you know, like we're working on it. Anyway, sent me a note first thing this morning. So now you can check your blood pressure, your oxygen saturation, heart rate, pulse wave, activity levels, calories burned. You know, this golf thing that I do occasionally, 10,000 steps, Phil. Like 7.5 kilometers, and you can see it, you can gauge it. But unlike a lot of these other, you know, sort of fitness bands, this one has got actual health information you can share with your health providers. Here's the promo code. It's HumbleFred. Hang on, I wrote it down somewhere. Oh, this is stupid. I was building up to this great moment, and now, hold on. I just want to make sure I get this right, because it would be dumb if I didn't. Hang on a second, because I had it. I thought I wrote it down. Here we go. HumbleFred HG gets you 15% off. 15% off for the health gauge. So that's what I wanted you to know. Okay.
That's fantastic.
Healthgauge.com.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Just want to make sure
it's on offer.
It is on offer. Thank you, Friedrich. It is on offer. And the guy that asked about it was Rod Fichette. FITCHETT. He's a correspondent with us before. And maybe that's where we segue into some emails. Would you like to do that? You have the emails in front of you?
Fred, you're on mute there.
I don't think. Do you have the emails there, Boo Boo?
Yes, I do.
All right.
Email.
I
have the
emails.
There.
Emails.
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 Time for
emails.
Let's read some.
Let's read some, Freddie.
Hi guys. Hi guys. What's Harapipa? Hi guys.
Howard.
Yes.
Howard. This is from Rob Dewey. Who is the dill hole commentator talking about how bad COVID has hit Canada? This guy doesn't know the USA has around three times the deaths of Canada. And he's saying, he says, go Mackenzie Hughes. I guess he's referring to the US Open commentator. Yes. And one of them, whoever that may have been, talking about Canada.
I didn't hear those comments, although I do want to talk about Mackenzie Hughes and his play yesterday and how you may have influenced something that is, I don't think I've ever seen. It's happened once in my recollection, but something you have done has influenced our Canadian and his performance yesterday. Okay?
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't know, and that is true.
Hi, guys.
What's
just
true?
Further to what he said, I've heard a lot of that lately. It's interesting. At the beginning of COVID, when it was so horrible in the United States, and we sort of had a smugness about what they were doing wrong, and hey, we're okay. And now it's sort of flipped. I've heard several comments out of the United States watching television news, whatever news shows, where they say, oh, geez, it's horrible in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, we're behind them. Yet at the same time, generally, they got hit a lot harder than us.
Yeah, way harder.
But it's something we have to live with and I guess on some level be aggravated by.
Yeah. Yeah, they seem to overlook the fact that 600,000 of their citizens died. And I don't have the number, but I think the last time I remember it was 25. Terrible. Every death. Mm-hmm. No death is no single death. Mm-hmm. You know. But I mean, as a percentage of our population, you know, we didn't even have... What is 600,000 as a percentage of their population versus ours?
Well, ours should be 60, right?
Right. Okay.
Per capita, and ours was less than that. You say every death is bad, but
yes.
You got to believe there was some assholes in there.
Oh, no, for sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I will... Many.
Hi, guys!
Hi, guys. I never get tired of...
holes.
Hi, guys. I never get tired of listening to you talking golf, the Leafs, and the former Orange guy. This comes to our attention from Colin in Kyoto. I believe Murray McLaughlin was mentioning Kyoto.
Konbawa.
He says, I'm sure there are a silent majority of Hundy peas who feel the same way and really enjoy the passion and knowledge you bring to these subjects. I just wanted to add to Howard's comment about golf last week as one of the unique sports wherein you can improve with age. He says, let me add swimming to that. I thought this is interesting. He says, 20 years ago, I was a super fit runner and cyclist with the goal of competing in a triathlon, but fitness didn't help at it in the water. It was all about form, balance, position, and movement. Like Howard in golf, I became obsessed with the sport. Am I obsessed? Maybe. And have taken lessons and swum in a master's group ever since. I am smoother and faster than I ever was with no end in sight. I would urge all your listeners who don't have access to golf and are interested in the health gauge, way to go, product mention, to take up swimming again. Your heart will love you for it. And you'll see it in the data. Thanks, love the show. Colin from Kyoto.
Mm-hmm. Arigato gozaimasu, Colin.
Come on, Phil. Mm-hmm. None of your racist talk, okay?
Racist? I'm being Japanese here.
All right. Freddie, there's more health gauge ahead. What's the next email have to say?
Okay. This is from... Ron Fichette.
Oh no, this is exactly. Okay. You just mentioned. That's just, the one. Before. Yeah, say his email.
What I said prior to I saw that one. Yeah. I want to drop down to Tony Clement.
Okay. Yes.
Susan McKenzie. Hi guys, I see you have Tony Clement on the show.
Yeah.
How'd he get that gig? A resume and dick pics. Anyway, it says. I guess this guy uses his wife's thing. It says Cheers Blair, but it's under the heading Susan McKenzie, whatever.
Yeah, I got confused by that too.
And what I will say to that is, you know, I read that, I, you know, and I guess Tony would be somewhat embarrassed by that. But you know what? He owned it. So,
yeah, we
all. That's the reason we continue to have him on the show. He's not one of these guys that tried to weasel it out. You know, he made a mistake and he owned it. And you move on. And the reason we have Tony Clement on the show is because he's a nice guy. He's interesting. And he made a horrible mistake. And what are you going to do?
Yeah, I don't have. Well, the only thing I would add is, you know, that all of that and the fact that we have access to a guy that used to sit in cabinet meetings mm-hmm. with the prime fucking minister. Okay? Mm-hmm. Okay? Okay? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm serious. Like, yeah, I would say the same thing to Susan and Blair that, mm-hmm. hey, you know, I'm sure you've got some things that you had to apologize for because God knows I have. So the fact that we have a guy like Tony Clement who has some perspective and information we would never have access to.
Mm-hmm. What I would say is, come on, Blair, get your own email. I mean, you really got to use your wife's?
No, come seriously, on. Man.
Blair, come on. Man up, buddy.
Yeah, all right. Okay, let's not make it worse. Fucking, okay. Let's not lose two listeners for the price of one.
Listen, either.
Blair and Susan McKenzie. Just because you like dressing up in your wife's email.
Mm-hmm. Hi, guys.
Finally, hey, guys. Love the show. The other day when you were talking about Blackwater and trailer toilets, one man kept coming to mind. Winston Rothschild III of Rothschild's Sewage and Septic Sucking Services, a.k.a. your buddy Jeff Lumby. And this comes from Zach Altilia. And Zach, you're absolutely right. We could have mentioned Winston. One of Jeff's long running characters on Red Green. It's funny because that voice he does, that little voice he does like that, it's actually a guy we knew. I think it's, I'll have to ask Jeff next time, but I always thought it was based on this guy both of us knew and we would have on our show occasionally in Montreal called Brian the Fireman. And he was a guy from Verdun, which is just outside of Montreal, and they're all a little bit like this. They talk like, sort of like that. And anyway, maybe we'll get Jeff on the show and he can do his character for you.
By the way, an update on that. That whole bit last week was me deciding whether I should get
shit tags.
A pump out or not. Ultimately, yeah. I didn't.
Uh-oh.
So I'm getting full up here.
Especially now that you're back in town mm-hmm. with your nasty deposits every day. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Wednesday can't come soon enough.
That's all right. It's shit tag day. Okay, why do I think that your team, you and your team, negatively influenced the final round of Mackenzie Hughes? I don't know if you know this kid. He's from the area. He's from the Niagara area. He actually works with a guy. I've interviewed his coach on my little golf podcast. And Mackenzie Hughes, you know, one of those great Canadian kids who plies his trade on the PGA Tour, went to a U.S. school, has already won. I think he's won a couple of times. Very fine player. Finds himself in the last group yesterday. U.S. Open, tied for the lead, has a very, very rough day. At the beginning of the broadcast, I was on golf Twitter, and I see Mackenzie Hughes tweets out his yardage book cover. I don't know if you know what these are. They each course gives you they set up a yardage book with all the different, you know, numbers and whatever, and they all have their own personalized book they carry in their back pocket. And don't you know, the yardage book cover that Mackenzie Hughes uses is what, Fred?
Toronto Maple Leafs. Wow.
Okay, so that's number one. Uh-huh. He's a super Leafs fan. Loves his Leafers.
Uh-huh.
And wouldn't you know it, he's having a rough day and he's sort of struggling, and come the back nine, something I still can't believe it happened, and it has to happen to our Canadian kid. He hits it left on this par three towards some trees. Now, if it hits the ground or hits into the trees and whatever, it'll just be like a tough shot, mm-hmm. but he isn't going to make a big number, maybe a bogey at worst. Mm-hmm. But it bounces on the cart path, and then it goes straight up vertically. Like, it gets this huge bounce, and it stays in the fucking tree.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can think of is the curse of the maple leaf yardage puck.
Well, what's the ruling there?
Well, once you identify the ball, then you can take an unplayable and you drop with a penalty stroke underneath the tree. But the fact that it stayed in the tree, are you kidding me?
If it was like on a low-hanging branch, are you allowed to whack it out of the tree if you want? Didn't I
technically you can
like
do that,
once?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it happened years ago where you have to, where a golfer climbed up the enough to,
right.
to identify it. But you can't play it. I mean,
maybe that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, if we're low enough, I mean, theoretically, you could take a whack at it, but every swing you take at it is a shot, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, Mackenzie Hughes, I just watched the end yesterday, but I was, you know, out and about here at the lake. I was watching the leaderboard, and I thought if he stays in contention, I'll give it more time. But then prior in the morning, I'm watching the news, and, you know, he plays out of the Dundas Club or Dundas something.
I think it's
Club.
Dundas Valley, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're interviewing some people from the club. And just the pressure on that level, they were saying the kids at that club just absolutely adore him, and he's, you know, he's the big superstar of the area. You know, when he tees off on that final round, all that stuff's got to be on his head, in his head. You know, there's a lot of people not depending on me, but expecting a lot of me. And then it gets back to what you always talk about, the mental aspect of the game. But he was pretty cool afterward. He said, you know what? You know, I played on the final day. That's under my belt now. Mm-hmm. And so I can use this experience going forward. I hope again it happens again soon.
Well, from what I know of the kid, and again, I know his coach a little bit, that he's just a terrific young man. You know what I mean? And I don't say this because it's Canadian, but partly there's a vibe we Canadian professional golfers have that's a little bit different. They kind of have they've been sort of sucked into the American this system because they all went to school in the States. But, you know, Mac or Mackenzie Hughes is just a terrific young guy. And I felt bad for him. But a lot of golfers have been in that situation where he was in over his head. It was too much. And, even the guy he played with, who's very experienced, also kind of shit the bed the last couple of holes and ended up not tying for the lead. But just when I saw Mackenzie Hughes proudly tweet out his Maple Leaf cover, I thought, oh, no, here we go. And then the ball stayed in the tree and I'm like, ah, there's the curse.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Wow. No.
I must say, John Rahm, his post-tournament interview, you know, before they presented the trophy, was very good, very elegant, eloquent, very genuine. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see it. He's a nice kid, that John Rahm.
Oh, man.
He's a very nice boy.
I mean, compare that to Tiger, right?
Oh, no. Tiger was terrible. Tiger was the worst interview in sport.
But
I think those kids have learned, though, you know?
Yeah. He just nailed it on every level. It was fantastic. I was really impressed with that.
And remember, 2 weeks ago, he's the one that had a 6-shot lead after the third round of a tournament. 2 weeks ago, found out he was positive COVID, had to give up. And he was so good about it. He said, listen, I'm not the first athlete in a professional sport that had to not play in a big game. By the way, speaking of big games, where's your Montreal Canadiens at?
They lost last night.
So it's 2-2 the series now?
It's 2-2.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't know. He was the first Spaniard ever to win a U.S. Open, right?
Yes. Only the third Spaniard, I believe, to ever win a major.
So Canada's only two behind.
well, no, we've had two Canadians. We've had three Canadians.
Majors.
Mike Weir, Brooke Henderson.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was referring
to that male now. Point.
Yeah.
A male major or whatever, men's major.
Uh-huh. And then he mentioned Seve Ballesteros, who had never won the U.S. Open, and I thought that was pretty cool, the way he brought Seve into it.
Yes.
Yeah, it was pretty neat.
Okay. Speaking of athletes, are you aware of this this fucking Cole Beasley.
Mm-hmm.
Are you aware of that story?
Yeah.
Who does he play for?
Buffalo.
Does he?
Bills. Yeah.
Everyone, I'm Cole Beasley and I'm not vaccinated. I will be outside doing what I do. I'll be out in public. If you're scared of me, then steer clear or get vaccinated. I may die of COVID, but I'd rather die actually living.
What does that mean?
Fuck, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. I'd actually die living, because getting the vaccine, apparently this is this is God talk with him or something.
Oh, is it?
His religion, yeah.
I'd rather take my chances with COVID. And I'm just picking, I'm okay, to be mm-hmm. fair, I'm just picking out the highlights from this long diatribe. Mm-hmm. I'd rather take my chances, drink water, exercise, and do what I think is necessary to be healthy and individual. That is my choice based on my experience.
And he claims he's going to walk away if the NFL has insists that players be vaccinated. He said he will quit. He will walk away from the sport. So that's conviction for you. But I guess he's already worth a few million dollars. So he thinks he can. There's just nothing to be gained by that. Who's he talking to?
To Jesus.
How is he helping himself? How is he helping anyone else?
Yeah,
and I don't want to. What do you, I'd rather the living thing. I don't understand. Like, a vaccine's going to kill him. Like,
yeah. He says, I get to live my life freely with my wife, kids, and extended family forever. We'd get to enjoy the times that we miss from the sacrifices we've had to make. Blah blah blah. So you know, the comments are just thousands of them. Here, the guy says, hey, Cole, quick question. Do you wear a seatbelt or would you rather not address a car crash that hasn't happened? Do you stretch or would you rather not work in a hamstring? Do you drink water or would you rather not deal with dehydration until you're dehydrated? Mm-hmm. But you're right, by the way, as usual. It's somehow in the wacky world of religion, something about, they all have that stink on them. They all have the God stink on them. And I'm just tired of it. Tired of it.
Yeah. You know, and he's a key player for the Bills. And, you know, he went on to say, you know, all I want to do is win a Super Bowl and be with my teammates and everything. Well, super. If you want to win a Super Bowl and be with your teammates, go get vaccinated. You pinhead. I mean.
No, I know. Jesus. So dumb. Fuck.
So all that, all the positive things that could come from getting a vaccine, he's willing to sacrifice for some other principle.
Yeah. And not only that,
leaves you scratching your head. None of it makes sense.
You know, you mentioned those kids at whatever golf course are excited that Mackenzie Hughes grew up playing there. Imagine all the kids that this Cole Beasley, that this guy could positively influence. But what he's doing is he's, you know, perpetuating this myth that somehow fucking Americans somehow that getting a vac or not being vaccinated is exercising your freedom and your right to live freely. And it's just nonsense.
Well, they're about to get a rude awakening because, you know, even again on Thursday and Friday, Trudeau is talking about the vaccine passport.
Yeah.
And again, his negotiations or his talks with other countries about how this thing is going to work. And it's fantastic. I want one.
So, you know? Yeah, so do I.
We all did it as a gesture to each other. So I want a passport and I want all those that decided to get a vaccine to have one as well. You know, as in almost like as a tribute to what we've done.
CNN story this morning, U.S. extends COVID-19 travel restrictions with Canada and Mexico. The interesting thing is they're making it sound like this is a U.S. only policy, but it's still our policy, is it not?
Yeah, because the U.S. is pushing to open things up. In fact, I think there's a congressman that's going to this week put some proposal forward to pressure Canada.
No, I know.
Into not waiting till July 21st. I mean, I wish we weren't either, but it gets back to the best thing for Doug Ford, the best thing for Justin Trudeau is to have that border open and the commerce to resume. But again, they're acting, they're siding on caution. And how do you argue with that at the end of the day? We can wait another 3 weeks.
Yeah, and by the way, later in this, it's funny how the headline is U.S. extends, as I read. And then you read the story, and about the third paragraph, on Friday, Canadian Minister of Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness, Bill Blair, announced that Canada had extended its COVID-19 restrictions. Hey, Fred, you know, we've been talking to our friend, the retirement Sherpa, about, you know, his adventures on both sides of the border. And, you know, the cool thing is, if you're in America and you're listening to us, that's cool, because Tim Niblett can help you.
Because he's a portfolio manager. Raymond James, a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. Tim was on last week. Very interesting segment about just how much money do you need to retire? Well, you know, it's different for a lot of people. It all depends on what you expect to do or what you want to do or how you want to continue a certain lifestyle. Very interesting. You might want to go back and listen to that. And it's something, again, it's part of your planning, you know? When you start a plan, when you, you know, switch guys to enhance your plan or improve your plan, that's part of the plan. What am I going to need when I retire? What kind of a life do I want to lead once I stop working? All very important things. Tim can help you with that. He's helped many Humble and Fred listeners with such, and he can help you. The Retirement Sherpa. Contact Tim at retirementsherpa.ca.
You can also email him, tim.niblett@raymondjames.ca. Hey, we're speaking of vaccines and vaccination. Every day, more and more people across this country are receiving their COVID-19 vaccines. Health Canada-approved vaccines are conveniently available. Hospitals, doctor's offices, pharmacies, Fred, and mass vaccination sites. Every dose brings us closer to what we've missed. So join millions of Ontarians. Do your part and get your shot. Visit ontario.ca/book vaccine paid for by the government of Ontario. Just to give you some perspective on how this is actually working, I believe our case count now is daily under 300 cases in Ontario. And even maybe more importantly, back in April, the positivity rate in our population was nearly 10%. It is now 2.5%, which is, as I was saying to Rachel, like, the number of cases we're getting now would be like as unremarkable if it were, you know, just the flu, right? You'd be like, oh, there's a few people who get the flu every year or every month.
Yes.
Anyways, this is an example of it actually, you know, starting to make sense and to take. Anyway.
Interesting poll result here from Nanos. You know, Nanos. It said women.
Yes.
Women, what is all that noise?
That's Dan Duran, everybody.
Banging around his kitchen. Women twice as likely as men to continue wearing masks after restrictions lifted.
Yeah, I saw that. I have the same numbers right in front of me.
Yeah, so twice as many women will continue to wear masks over their pretty faces after they don't have to. And I've had this conversation with my suite, and the as day they I. say... the day they're no longer needed, boom, gone. Because I think we'll be wearing them even after we probably need to.
I had the same conversation with Rachel, my love. I said to her, you know, there's going to, and then this is before I saw that survey. I said, there's just, you know what it's like? It took us a while to get our heads around going into this pandemic. And why I was just, when Murray and Clint came on the show an hour ago, I was about to tell you, I'm not ready to declare the pandemic over. And she said to me, oh, is it you? Are you the one? And I said, no, what I mean is, like, I think there's going to be people, myself included, I won't get on an airplane without a mask. I probably won't, you know, I'd like to go into restaurants.
Yeah, how long, though?
Well, for a while.
Okay.
You know, for a while. You know, I think I had a conversation with your wife the other day, and I think there's going to be people like her that will be a little more reticent for a while. And as I said to you the other day, it's going to take us, you know, four seasons. Well, maybe I was talking to her about this. I think, you know, we're all going to have to. No, I was talking to Rachel about this. You know, when you lose a loved one or you have a breakup or you get fired, like which we have all had, it takes a year or so, they say, to go through Christmas without that person and then this holiday and that holiday. And the point being, we all will have to have a year or so to get our heads around life again. because last summer it all seemed fine. And then we got locked down in the fall for an unprecedented amount of time. So I think we're all going to be like, okay, we went on our first vacation. We had our first gathering. We went to a concert. Do you know where I'm kind of going with this?
Yes, I do. And I think there's going to be different levels. Like, if we're told that you don't have to wear a mask on an airplane, I probably will, out of courtesy to those that will be concerned about it, only because of proximity, how tight that is.
Yes.
Now, if I'm told I don't have to wear a mask and I walk into Costco one day and there's hardly anybody there, I'm not going to wear the masks. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Sorry. I'm just going to roll with it. Some of it will be courtesy, though. Or if you walk into a place and it's especially crowded, it'll be like, okay, I'll carry this in my pocket. And if it makes those around me feel better, which I can understand they might be concerned because, you know, we're packed in here. Okay. But generally, like, you know, day to day, with the way you wear it now, everywhere. If I walk into the beer store and there's nobody in there, I'm not putting a mask on if I don't have to.
Have you had this experience? Yeah. I kind of agree with you, but I mean, I might for a while. Because, you know, I was picking up food on Friday night on Queen Street East there, you know, Queen and Broadview area. Just packed with people. It was great seeing. Mm-hmm. You know, you asked me before the show started, did we eat on a patio? And I said, no, but I picked up food and watched people on patios just up and down the street. Mm-hmm. And one thing I did say about the restaurant, and maybe you had this experience, it's almost like restaurants are just sort of getting their footing again, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of stuff was happening. Our order was delayed. No big deal, but it was just like, almost like they're out of practice. Mm-hmm. But to your point about, I have found more and more where I go to walk into a place, and I realize, oh, shit, I haven't put my mask on yet.
Right.
You know, and I've gone back to the car or I forget it's in my hand. You know what I mean? Whereas, so I think what I said about a year or so of getting back to where we sort of forget the way mm-hmm. it was for the last 17, 18 months.
Mm-hmm. No, it will be, it'll be interesting to see how it all unfolds. I'm looking forward to maybe a couple of years from now when we look back on this and go, wow, remember that?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I think.
Remember that time in our lives?
You know, they talked about the new normal and then life resuming and whatever. It's going to take a while. We're going to have to go through a bunch of things. Mm. You know, again, your first party that you go to or your first gathering with strangers that aren't part of your circle, etc. I mean, I had Father's Day with the girls yesterday. And all three of us were sitting outside on Charlie's porch, and it was nice. And Spencer let me hug her, and Charlie and I we all had a good daddy-daughter-daughter hug. And I just remember it wasn't that long ago when neither of them, for my own protection, would let me get near them. You know, they were worried mm-hmm. that Papa, you know, might get sick. So I think it's going to be a while when that stuff starts to wear off.
Right. Yeah, I've been there for a while. We've been, I'm not going to say pretty free. I mean, within our family. But
yeah,
I've been hugging the grandkids for some time.
Well, how do you know
my kids?
Jesus.
But, you know, it's our own kind of tracking.
No, I understand.
They've been homeschooled, and my daughter and her son or my daughter and her husband are vaccinated, and so you just bring a little logic into it and proceed.
We're going to get to some logic with Dan Duran in a second. But first, I want you to know that RLH Red Light Holland is a publicly traded company on the CSE. It is. Their ticker symbol is TRIP. Shapiro is going to be back on our show this week. He got some interesting news about the company. He's the CEO. Can you believe it? Well, you should. It's $100 million market cap. And I got to say that as part of the partnership, make sure you talk to a financial advisor before considering buying stock. You can support Red Light Holland here in Canada by going to imicrodose.ca. And if you're overseas, you can order Magic Truffles in the Netherlands. Red Light Holland is engaged in that production and produces their own brand of iMicrodose packs sold online in the Netherlands. And they're available at imicrodose.ca. Once again, imicrodose.ca. I'm sorry. In the Netherlands, it's imicrodose.nl. Here in Canada, it's imicrodose.ca. And of course, here in Canada, Sorry, I've had a double screen problem. There we go. Here in Canada, we have access. God damn it. Sorry. Got nine things going on. Shh. You be quiet, Dan Duran. Every time you come on now, it's a big kerfuffle.
That's why. Why should it be?
Well, no, but when you came on the Zoom thing, both Fred and I were talking, and all we can hear is you bing, bang, booming around there, brother.
Oh, right.
Clamoring.
Yeah.
So when you do something, it's fine.
Dan Duran, the Echo Man, comes and asks for credentials. He has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the Anchorman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care, and his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
I'm having some operational difficulties. Why have you turned off your camera?
Well, I heard some hiccuping coming in, your feed coming in, so I thought maybe my bandwidth is shaky.
Well, we've got about 3 minutes or so before a guest coming up here in a second. Dan Duran's News, brought to you by Dan Duran, everybody.
Today is National Day of the Gong, so to celebrate, get your gong out and bang it.
Okay.
It's also summer solstice today, by the way.
Yeah, so is today the longest day of the year?
It is. It's 15 hours, 26 minutes, and 32 seconds long.
I know what Fred's about to say. What? Starting tomorrow... The days get shorter.
Which is a bit of a drag when summer's just starting, but, you know. Compare that to December 21st when the days start getting longer. It's gloomy and not so nice out, but it gives you a flicker of hope.
Yeah. So you're saying the 6 seconds.
Crazy how that works.
So your point is, as of tomorrow, the 6 seconds shorter day will make you feel like we're all doomed.
Yes. Yeah, something like that.
Fred's an optimist until now, and then he turns into a pessimist until.
No, I know.
The winter solstice.
Yeah. Inspirational. What else? Dan Duran, though, so you must have some stories.
I do. In New York City, there's an election brewing, and with all the wacky stuff going on there, there's this gem, a council candidate who has... had to address a leaked video of himself. Mm. A video is of him in bondage. Now, candidate Zach Wiener, advancing the Wiener name,
is he related to the other Wiener?
I don't know.
Oh,
the Wieners seem to be doing a lot of Wiener work.
Jesus, fuck.
He has found enjoyment in a New York dominatrix club. Mm. He said the release of the video is a violation of trust, but... he didn't apologize for the footage itself, saying he wouldn't be subjected to kink shaming.
Oh, yes.
Which is the thing. This was a recreational activity that I did with my friend at the time for fun. I am a proud BDSMer.
Mm.
I like BDSM activity. The primaries are on Tuesday. The election is in November. I don't think you'll be hearing much of the Wiener Man.
Hey, Dan, speaking of Wieners... You're kind of a cool guy with your apps and things. Have you ever in your adult life or as a young man, as a suitor, did you ever send pictures of your wiener?
No.
To anyone?
The wieners of the world have made the wiener pick something you shouldn't do, really, I found.
Well, no, I'm just curious. You never sent anyone?
No. Even only because his camera didn't have panoramic on it.
No, I know. I was waiting for the show. Was your camera not have enough megapixels? Fine. Right. You claim to never having sent a dick pic. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Dan Duran, you sexual rogue. Oh.
I throw that back at you, Howard. What about you?
Tons.
Hey, what about you?
Tons. Huh? Tons.
Really?
Serious? Send it to everybody. Sure. I send it out as a Christmas card.
Like what?
It's my dick dressed up as a snow cone.
Does it have a best side or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, actually, it's very attractive.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm being serious now. Enough of the funny.
Well, no, I'm not. We haven't got time. We got this other guy coming up. I haven't got time for these questions.
It's a yes or no.
I said yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, now the next question is to who?
And now with more news, here's Dan Duran.
Tiger?
You said yes, I did say.
The wackiness in the
wait
US.
A second. Don't tell me you hadn't sent a dick pic to Borya Salming. Dear Borya, this I'm little anyway. Fred. Hold me closer, what? Tiny dancer. Dan, do you have another story for us?
Yeah, the wackiness in the U.S. political war continues. Okay, we got the guns, the vote suppressioning, the Phoenix recounting, and the January 6th insurrection, gaslighting. All good head-shaking stuff.
Yes.
But then there's this, Dr. Ronnie Jackson. You remember, he's the former President Donald Trump physician that when he was in office said Trump had incredible genes and gave him incredible checkups and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he's a congressman now, and he wrote a letter to the current White House doctor demanding that President Joe Biden undergo a cognitive fitness test.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I know.
That isn't out of the blue.
No, I know.
It's like, and a bunch of other Republicans got on board and sent the whole darn thing along with, or signed it and sent it off and included a copy to Fauci as well. I don't know what I guess just, you know, throwing something else out there to make things just worse.
You know, they just continue to be literally the worst people on the planet. And the fact is they don't think that. It's just so dumb. Dan, we're going to have to cut you short. Thank you for your service today.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's always great to be on the show. And, you know, welcome to summer.
Thank you, sir. And Fred, Dan Duran's news brought to you today by Gig Sky. If you would do me the service of talking about our friends.
There's indication in the next few weeks, Canada will open its borders for travel, which means you need to start preparing for that long-awaited trip. Whether you're off to the tropics, heading to Europe, or just plan to make your way down south, you'll need a mobile data provider to keep you connected while you're there. Download the Gig Sky app for Android or iOS and get affordable data coverage in over 190 countries using your phone's eSIM. It's the easiest, most affordable, and convenient way to stay connected internationally, whether you're pulling up directions, looking for the coolest restaurant or bar, or sharing your post-COVID pics on Instagram. You'll want to access data when traveling. All Gig Sky data plans are prepaid with no contracts or recurring fees. You get what you pay for, and your service is never throttled. So download the Gig Sky app today and enter code HF2021 for $5 off your first plan or visit gigsky.com for more info.
Very good. Let's let me get some music here for our next guest. And we've spoken to Allie before. Got our wires crossed a couple days ago. Welcome back to our program. The CEO of Lyte Medical, L-Y-T-E, Ali Mohammed. Welcome back to a safe space. This is a safe space for you, Ali.
Thank you for having me again.
Man, I love the idea of the vertical. Let me try it again. The virtual medical clinic. And you're announcing the launch of a first-of-its-kind Canadian telehealth association. Over to you, good sir.
Yeah, so we're very excited about this. Our goal is to have collaboration in the space, because telemedicine is still in its infancy. We have the ability to make Canada a global leader in telemedicine. So my goal is instead of looking at each other's competition, let's collaborate, let's work together, and let's make Canada one of the top countries in the world when people are looking at telemedicine. Let's set the trend and let's be the leader.
You know, a lot of things have changed. Our show has changed. Fred and I haven't done an in-person show together since March of last year. And I talked to a lot of my friends that are sort of in business and talking about the way the world will work going forward. But I think one of the things that's happened in the pandemic is I think people are starting to get more comfortable, my sense is, in a virtual health consultation situation. Is that what you find at Lyte Medical?
I do. I think that the pandemic has actually accelerated telemedicine now because of accessibility and how easy it is to use. But I think that after people have been using it, the adoption rates are very high. Mm-hmm. You realize you don't have to drive 2 hours to sit in the hour waiting room and then drive to a pharmacy. When you can do all that from the comfort of your couch and get your meds delivered to your door, people are starting to realize how valuable this can be. For us, we've always been so focused on patient care and the needs of the patient. If we can take away the days that they're losing at work, by simply seeing a doctor online. If we can attack the patient when they've got a tickle in their throat instead of 2 weeks when they're going to the hospital, we're doing something right. So that's been our focus, and it's great to see the adoption rates.
And so it should be. I mean, that even how often do people end up in an emergency room when they don't need to? And I'm talking, you know, before the COVID world. Often that was a lot of frustration for hospitals and frustrations for patients, you know, maybe if you didn't have your own GP. It just makes so much sense. I mean, it's relief for the whole system.
I agree. And, you know, there's millions of Canadians that don't have a family doctor.
Yeah.
There's millions of Canadians that live in rural Canada that have to drive 2 hours just to get access to a doctor. Mm-hmm. And you know, those are the guys that are the ones that get really sick before they actually go anywhere. We want to stop that. We want to move to preemptive healthcare in Canada. You got a tickle in your throat, something feels off, see a doctor. It's free. It's covered under OHIP. Let's get Canadians taking back control of their health. And honestly, the system will work much better. And then we won't have to shove pills down people's throats if we do it this way.
Well, let's talk about the mechanics of this. In the literature here, the CMA, Canadian Medical Association, found that 47% of us have used virtual care. And I like what you said about the pandemic accelerated something that was already on the way. 91% claim to be satisfied with the experience. But I always think about this, you know, Fred and I, you know, we'll talk about having to go to the doctor and waiting to see a doctor. But I will tell you, Allie, the same thing happened to us during the pandemic in terms of getting guests. We had Murray McLaughlin on this morning. Now, he's up at a lake near Freddie. But if we were doing the show, Murray would have to come all the way into town to promote his album. And you know where I'm heading with this. It was just so easy to get on a Zoom call. And so I would say we're very satisfied with the, you know, sort of interpersonal interaction. So how does it work at Light Medical? Do I sign up and then I just say, hey, I've got a tickle in my throat, or I want to ask about a thing on my back? How does it actually work mechanically with you guys?
Absolutely. You go to lytemedical.com, you hit book appointment. We have a basic intake form that figures out why you're there to see the doctor, and then off to the races. The whole process takes about 10 minutes. And then you book your appointment and you're ready to see a doctor, whether it's today, tomorrow, or a week from now. That's entirely up to you, but there's availability every day. So we try to make it as easy as possible. So that way it encourages patients to use a system. The last thing we want is a patient to have a tedious process when they're about to see a doctor and then we lose their interest. We're trying to encourage them to do this. So we're trying to make it as easy as possible.
Yeah, like last summer, I had these weird growths on my arm. They were, remember those bumps?
They were cool.
And we were into COVID. No, but they said to me, take a close-up picture or two of it and then email it to us. And then they got back to me and said, you know, your concerns, we understand why you're concerned about this, but we can see what it is and relax. It's just something that's easily solved.
Right.
Which, you know, if I had to actually have an appointment to go in and see that doctor, who knows how long that would have taken.
And imagine the stress levels that you have until you get an answer, right? It's that waiting in limbo time that the patients have the hardest time with, myself included. You know, when I look at the company that we have, I always tell our team, it's every member could be my mom, my sister, or my niece that's going through it. So that type of panic, if you can address it right away, whether it's good or bad, at least we're getting to the situation immediately, and we're not wasting time.
What about when it comes to seeing a specialist? Is that also available on Light Medical?
So what we do is we have a huge referral network. So for this situation, let's say if you needed a derm, our doctors would recommend or refer you to a derm specialist, and you'd be seen a lot faster than the 6-month waiting list that you're currently on.
Okay.
So we have a great network. We also have great partners with in-clinic services. So if there's something that's a bit that we can't figure out over telemed, then we'll send you into a physical clinic. But we have a great referral network, and we've got great specialists that are a couple clicks away.
So what I love about this is, specialist problems aside for a second, just everyday wondering. You have a cough, maybe you got some swollen glands, something's happening that you just want to, and I like what you said, Allie, about you just kind of want to have some peace of mind around it. In terms of getting an answer right away, as opposed to going, you know, doing the whole Maybe, because here's the thing. A lot of us might have a minor issue and not think it's warrants driving all the way to your doctor's office, making the appointment. But if you go to Light Medical, then you can, you know, get it. You can get an access to a doctor that day or the next day. And then you've got that worry behind you. What is the actual website? Where do people go? Tell us all about that. And then we're going to let you
go. So it's lytemedical.com. You'll see it anywhere. Just book an appointment, and we've got a toll free number that you can call. Whatever's the easiest for the patient. But we truly believe that if you go to lytemedical.com, all your worries and your troubles will be solved.
Well, listen, my friend, I remember having spoken to you before. You're a very nice person, obviously.
Thank you.
thanks for checking in with us. We'd like to have you on, you know, more regularly, Allie. You know, we can make that happen.
It's always such a pleasure to be on.
It is. I know. Look how pleasant we are.
You know, I never thought I'd be talking about telemedicine this much in my life, but this is phenomenal. And honestly, our focus has always been patients. So thank you guys for letting me kind of get our message out there and getting better service to more patients.
Listen, man, I hope this isn't the last time we talk. I think there's so much we could talk about when it comes to Light Medical. Maybe you and I and Jess will get on a call later on. Okay, my friend?
100%.
Take care.
Thank you, guys.
Lightmedical.com. LYTE. Freddie, let's talk last time about this government and what the government's doing.
Every day, Howard, every day, more and more people across Ontario are receiving their COVID-19 vaccines. Health Canada approved vaccines are conveniently available in hospitals, doctor's offices, pharmacies, and mass vaccination sites. And every dose brings us closer to what we've missed. So join millions of Ontarians. Do your part. Get your shot. Visit ontario.ca/bookvaccine. And this is paid for by the government of Ontario.
Is it? No. All right. What? You know, it was kind of interesting. It was sort of forced on us because Murray came early with us today. But that was kind of nice, you know, starting the show. And then right away we had Murray McLaughlin on.
Yeah, he wouldn't give his exact location on Stony Lake, but I'm going to get in my boat and just go around the shore of Stony today looking for him, see if I can see where he is.
Yeah, you should do that.
I'll have binoculars and stuff. Yeah.
Or you know what? Why don't you get his email address and send him a nice Freddie P. dick pic? Or Photoshop it, your dick in a canoe. That would be a nice...
Oh, come on.
You don't want to embarrass myself. You don't want to Photoshop a picture of your wiener in a canoe and send it to Marie McLaughlin? What's wrong with you? You know, you've changed. The old Freddie P. would have done it.
On that point, it's amazing how different things do different things for people. He's always so excited about his canoe. I don't know if I could ever get excited about a canoe.
Well, I didn't want to mention to him how lame I think canoeing is, but that's, you know. Because the whole video of that Tom Thompson song is him canoeing around a beautiful lake, and I'm like, how did you keep it going after about 10 minutes? This program brought to you by Health Gauge, Government of Ontario, Red Light Holland, Gig Sky, the Retirement Sherpa, and the Chamber Plan. And, of course, we appreciate our Patreon support and you people on Facebook as well. We'll see you all tomorrow when our guest will be the great and talented Jeff America. With your pair of shoe boots, passing the Gucci from coast to coast, like a man, Gary Wilson.